Please remember that the Lucy Pod is not a replacement for professional medical advice. If you have questions or concerns about your own amazing brain, please speak to a medical professional. I'd also like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which I speak to you all today, the peoples of the Kulin Nation. Always was, always will be Aboriginal land. Alrighty. Hello everyone and welcome back to the Lucy Pod. I hope that you are all well and are staying safe. Today I have a guest joining me to talk about all things ADHD. Please welcome Therese to the pod. Hi Therese, how are you? Tell us about yourself.
You make me sound very wonderful there with the pronunciation of the name. Thank you. Yes, I'm good. Thank you. I'm good. Thanks for having me on. This is really exciting.
So, I'm very, very glad you could join.
Thank you. And it's, so I'm in Northern Ireland and it's 8 o'clock in the morning here. So I'm sure it's quite late with you, is it?
Oh, it's five. So five. It's not too bad for now. It's still good. Light outside.
That's always a bonus. So I am Trez, I'm 37 and I'm a social media manager. I'm also a mum. And I've got ADHD and I was diagnosed 2022. So kind of sort of in that weird lockdown period, you know, of COVID. Yes. And sort of things hadn't really come back fully. And I was diagnosed privately. Mm-hmm. Twice, actually, which is a bit random.
Wow.
So over here, we have got the National Health Service. Mm. So you know, that's public funded. But the wait lists are extremely long. Mm. So they were saying about 3 to 4 year wait.
Wow.
For me at that point, mental health was at an all time low. I was just like, I just need to know. My son was diagnosed with autism, about 4 years ago. Mm. So it was only really after he got his diagnosis that I started kind of seeing parts of myself in him. And I thought, oh, okay.
That's such a common story I hear. I hear so much of like, I had another interview earlier and they were like, oh, when my child got diagnosed, I was like, I kind of see a few parallels and that's what prompts people to get diagnosed.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then you look at people around you and you're like, yeah, they were, you know, I think it's one of those things you can just start seeing your own people really when you get your diagnosis.
Yes. But you get a radar. It's like when gay people are like, I have a gaydar, we have an ADHD radar. Yes.
We definitely do.
Yes.
And I think just that prompted me. So I thought, okay. So the first place I went to, they provided me, I got diagnosed, but there was no option of medication. And then I was going to have to go back through and see another psychiatrist to be able to get medication. So that was going to take a long time and a lot of money. So I found another place online and they were able to, I went through the whole same process again, but they diagnosed me and then they got, they were able to provide medication. I was paying for it at the start. And then there's a thing here called shared care.
Okay.
So you basically, if your doctor agrees, they will take on the care, you know, basically, so you don't have to pay for your prescriptions.
Wow.
So thankfully I'm at that stage. Wow. You know, we don't have to pay for prescriptions over here, which is great. Also a lot of GPs don't do that. You know, it depends on your GP. There can even be a couple of GPs in the one practice and only one of them agrees. So for a lot of people over here at the minute, that's what they're struggling with. They've got this private diagnosis, but they can't get medication from their, you know, they can't get the shared care. So then they're left with big medication bills and it's really, really difficult. The adult ADHD services in Northern Ireland are basically non-existent. Mm-hmm. There's been a lot of fighting for it in local parliament and things like that to try and get awareness out there because, you know, it's really bad and a lot of people are struggling now.
Why do you think that is? Is it just a lack of awareness or is it just like a lack of resources on their part or they just don't care?
I think massively lack of resources is like everything over here. Northern Ireland's kind of in the dark ages, you know, with everything, and our health services is so bad. It's overrun, you know, it's people are really burnt out, and there's definitely a lack of resources. Even with my son, like, you know, the waiting, it took about 4 years for the whole process from start to finish to get him diagnosed.
That's exhausting.
It is, and he's also now awaiting an ADHD diagnosis. He's gone through the first stage. He had to do like a clicker test. They put like a ball his head. And like myself and my partner are outside the room, and, you know, first few clicks you could hear. And then all I could hear was just these clicks going off every second. And I'm like, he's definitely bored now. He's just clicking for the sake of clicking. We're still waiting for that. Could be another year, could be another 2 years. We just don't know. But hopefully he gets it. He's in primary five now. Not sure what that is with you guys, but he's going to secondary school in about 2 years. So
grade five. Yeah, he'd be in about grade five. Yep. Okay.
So I want to try and get that support for him. Not that there is a lot of support, to be honest. Once you get your diagnosis, that's it. You're kind of just good luck. But I want to get things in place for him that I never had to help him.
Of course they're so important, because accommodations, the earlier you get the accommodations, the easier it is. Like, early intervention is so important. People think like it should get really bad until you ask for help. You should just ask for help. That's the first thing that you should start off with. So I think what you're doing is fantastic.
Thank you. I know, and people say, you know, you shouldn't try and label your child, or, you know,
people who say that don't have neurodiverse children. Yeah, because if you're more worried about me labeling my kids than me telling you like what my kid's dealing with, then like you have no idea. No one who has a neurodiverse kid thinks that way. You're not labeling your child. Like, if someone says my child has cancer and I want them to have chemo, you wouldn't say, why are you labeling your child as a child with cancer? They're not sick. Like, that's it's insane. Absolutely. It's actually insane. Before we get more into this, and I want to talk more about the situation in Northern Ireland, I asked my guests a series of questions. You already answered the first one, which is, when were you diagnosed with ADHD? So the second question I have is, what are your current hyperfixations / special interests?
I suppose for me, my business, really. Because I love what I do, I finally got to a place in my life where I've do enjoy what I do, and I'm not kind of floating now. So I really have a lot of focus on my job, creating That's content wonderful. And, you know, getting out there, always thinking of new ideas. You don't really switch off when you work in social media, because obviously it doesn't switch off. So you know, you're, even when I'm out the weekend and stuff, I'm still taking videos of things that I can use for content, or so that's one of them. I'm getting married in 6 weeks, so that's another big
thing. So exciting. Congratulations.
It is. But it's also like, oh God, it feels like a huge kind of, it's, you know, whenever you hyper focus on something, you just can't get it out of your head. And that's what I'm going through right now. And that's all I think about day in, day out. And will the dress fit? And I'm going up to collect it now after this. Yes. And I'm like, please let me have done enough for now to get it just over my head.
It'll fit, it'll look gorgeous.
Thank you. But I get really kind of, I love traveling about and stuff. So when I get out and about at the weekends, and when I get away to a different place, I just have that bug and I want to just do it constantly. So, but I mean, I've done all the usual starting and stopping hobbies, buying in loads of crafts, and
we've all done that. It's...
what was the last one? Resin art, I think. I had bought all the stuff resin to start art. Resin art.
Interesting. And
I did it for a day, and then I was like, no,
I'm good. I'm not an artsy ADHD person. I always like see them, like ADHD is on like Instagram, or even hear from people, they're like, oh, my special interest is Lego at the moment, and I just don't have the motor skills for that. Fixations are like not motor skill reliant at all, because I can't, and it would be a complete waste of money, like trying to do resin art or Lego. It would just be
thousands, it'd be silly. Thousands has been wasted over the years, like on stuff. You know, it's crazy.
Oh my God, it's silly. It's how our brain works. The third question I have, and the final question, is, what is an ADHD trait that you feel is unique to you? Like, that could be your personality, but also could be a combination of the ADHD, and it's not something you see other ADHDers kind of displaying.
I suppose resilience. I'm not saying that ADHD people aren't resilient, because we are. We have to be But I've had quite a lot of trauma in my life, and just I've fought back every time, and I've got up. And this was before I knew what I was dealing with. And I think just nothing's going to put me down. Do you know what I mean? I can get knocked down several times, and I'll just keep going. And I like to think that I'm quite open-minded, and that I'm not judgmental. You know, I'm an open book, and people can tell me what they want, and I'll not judge them, because either I've done it, or, you know, it's,
you get it,
you're, or you not don't a care, bad like person, you're not judging. You know, yeah, exactly.
Of course, of course.
I wouldn't say those are awful unique things to maybe anybody else, but just,
well, I think they're unexpected things, because a lot of people think that ADHD is like, they have very negative views about them. It's like, you're like intense, selfish, impulsive, not very intelligent, socially awkward. So when people do say things like, I'm very kind, I'm very open-minded, I'm resilient, people are like, oh, like, yeah, you can be that. And yes, we can. A lot of us are. It's a silly stereotype of everything else. We actually are quite nice and decent human beings. And of course, everyone has their moments. We can be really difficult. I have my days where I'm not a particularly nice human being, but I'd like to think I'm, you know, pretty resilient, and I'm a nice human being most of the time. I feel like we are, and my ADHD doesn't stop me from being like that. So it is unique to other people, but it shouldn't be, because, like, we're not just like everyone else, but we are just human beings, and we're just trying to do our best. We're literally trying to do our best. So let's talk more about, so your experience getting diagnosed was super difficult, and your son's going through it as well. So obviously the situation in Northern Ireland is just really, really bad. I hear from a lot of Americans or I don't know, like even other Aussies, and the situation here is not like, it's not great, but it's pretty good compared to what you're describing. So what's the procedure of getting a diagnosis? How do you go about it? What are the costs? What do you have to do?
So if you go through the National Health Service, you would go to your GP, first of all. And I've heard from a lot of people that the GP just isn't experienced enough to really know the signs, and they, you know, that can be tricky, because you're trying to be open and honest, and they're going, oh, I'm not too sure, I'm not the best person to speak to, I'll need to refer you on. At that stage, you would get referred to the ADHD and psychiatry and stuff, but again, it's just a long, long slog. It's a long battle for me.
Is it expensive? Because is the NHS for free? The NHS is free,
NHS is free. So if you do it that way, it's free. Okay. I went online. So it was a company called MyPace. And then, you know, you have to do the usual questionnaires, had to get like family to fill in questionnaires and things as well, talking about your past and things like that. And then you meet with the psychiatrist and you have a long chat. The psychiatrist said to me, you know, why do you think you've got ADHD and not autism?
I could have both.
Exactly.
And you tell me.
I was like, oh, okay. And now as I get older, I think I probably do have autism as well. I'm a lot more, a lot more sensory aware of more sensory issues and things. Like, I love the thought of not having a routine. Don't want to be tied down to a routine, but I absolutely need a routine to function. If my routine goes out the window, I am a mess. But yeah, it was expensive. It cost me about probably in total now. And then you have to get, once you get your diagnosis, you have to do like a couple of 3 monthly reviews. Then you get your medication, and then you have to do like a 6 monthly review. So overall, it's probably cost me about $3,000 in total between all the different appointments, medications, that kind of thing. So it's a lot of money
that people do not have. It's so much money. Even like in Australia, I think the initial cost for an autism diagnosis and ADHD diagnosis is $600.
Okay.
Like, that's just too much. So I'll be like, that's not bad. That's a lot of money. Some people like only make that much, you know. It's That's really expensive. And then
it's scary. It's sad because you know, what I always try and say is, you know, to people, you wouldn't deny somebody, you know, medication for, say, diabetes or heart problems.
No, of
like why
not.
Why is it such a fight to get medication for ADHD? And even if you do have your, you know, I'm lucky again, the fact that my GP has recognized my diagnosis. A lot of places won't even recognize a private diagnosis that's not been done under the NHS.
So it sounds like there's like this separation, like GPs should be working together with specialists and with ADHD specialists, but yet they're like working against each other.
Yeah.
When they should kind of be all in communication so that they do recognize it. Because it's not as if like ADHD is this new thing and GPs are a little bit like apprehensive of, oh, we don't know if we want to recognize it. Like this is a diagnosed known condition that you've been diagnosed with. Why is it so hard for GPs to recognize and provide care? Because it's care. It's not they're just giving you meds like for fun. Like this is therapy, it's care, just like a doctor would provide care to someone who, you know, is diabetic, who needs insulin or whatever. Like that, it's healthcare.
Yeah, and I don't get it. I mean, it's kind of like, why would we want this for ourselves? Why would we want to have, you know, these troubles throughout our life if we didn't need the help, you know? And
yeah, we don't do it for fun. No one goes to get a diagnosis because they're having a good time. Exactly. Like, no one goes, I'm going to be diagnosed with ADHD because I'm doing so well in life. Life is so good for me. You're going to get diagnosed because things are crap.
Yeah.
So exactly. Yeah.
And you've struggled for so long. I mean, like I know now if I had had my diagnosis from a young age, my life would have looked so differently.
I was going to ask, what's it like being diagnosed so late? Because I hear from so many older, like, people who have been diagnosed, like people who are diagnosed in their 20s and onwards, they're like, they describe a sense of grief and anger, like of what could have been. How did you feel when you were diagnosed? Were you relieved? Were you grieving or both? Or how did you feel?
At first, definitely relief, a light bulb moment to go, okay, this makes sense. This is why I could never really hold down a proper job or relationships, struggled with friendships, you know, why I was addicted to spending money and, you know, trying alcohol at a young age or substance, you know, it all made
impulsivity.
Sense. Yeah. But then came the anger. Why wasn't it picked up on sooner? Why did no one notice? How have I gone so long in years of therapy and on different depressants, antidepressants and things, anxiety meds, for no one to ever pick up that I had ADHD. Then the grief of, you know, what you could have achieved in life probably, and you've been fighting so hard to kind of pull back because you spent your 20s just going out partying and, you know, to block
haven't
things
we all?
Out, really, you know.
But- Yeah, of course.
It was exactly the same when I found out my son was autistic. I grieved. I cried. More so for the worry of how his life would be and how, you know, for struggles that he might face. But, you know, I think
it's scary. It's really
too,
scary. Oh, yeah, of course.
I know now how my brain works and I can try and break it down to him in a way that he'll understand. Mm. You know, like things like rejection sensitivity. Yes. And, you know, maybe not really enjoying a subject at school, but just trying your hardest to get through it. You will find things that you really love. Mm. You know, bits like that helps. And I think that's a blessing that I can be like that rather than I can have a good understanding of it rather than not knowing and not knowing what's going on with them sort of thing.
Well, you almost have a special insight. Like a lot of people are like, oh my God, like imagine being ADHD and then having an ADHD kid or being autistic and having an autistic child. And while it could be a recipe for disaster, like maybe on days where you're not in the mood and he's not in the mood and you're both like, I am gonna like strangle someone. But it also is very nice because you can have moments where you go, I do this as well. I know how they're feeling. I can help them. So I always say that to myself when I get worried about having a kid. I'm like, kid's probably going to be ADHD. It will be hard, but hopefully I will be able to relate to them, and I'll be able to like help them, and it won't be this like weird thing of, you know, I'm neurotypical, I've got this ADHD kid, I don't know what to do with them. Like it gives you almost another, it gives you a different lens for parenting.
Yeah, it does. And it's, you know, there are days absolutely where we butt heads because we're so similar.
Yeah.
But I can read him completely, and I know when he's struggling, and I know when he has to get something off his chest. Mm. And again, I'm not angry, I'm not judgmental. I just tell him, you know, nothing you could tell me is going to be too bad for me to not be able to work through it. So he knows he's got a safe space here, and that's all I ever wanted to create for my child. You know, like the first few years were horrific. I didn't enjoy parenting at all. It was, I suppose, I read something that really resonated with me. It's like, you know, when you're ADHD and you become a parent, you've built yourself up, and you've put things in place to protect yourself and to help
strategies. Yeah. Yeah.
And then whenever a baby comes along, because they're so unpredictable and they don't sleep and they don't, it just blows everything out in the water, and you just explode. And like, I wasn't coping well in the first few years. I was really depressed and really struggling, because he just wasn't like other kids. Like, he didn't ever, he was really poor sleeper. He still is a poor sleeper. He takes melatonin to help him sleep, but he just was always running around and never sitting still. And like other people had their kids sitting, and it was just exhausting. And
I can't imagine. It would just, look, because parenting's hard. And then if you add having a neurodiverse kid, it would be so difficult. It's just so difficult. And I can't imagine in the pandemic, like parents were complaining about being at home. Oh, I'm so annoyed, I have to be home with my children and they're getting schooled online. Well, thank God you don't have a neurodiverse child or a disabled child, because that would be another layer of hell to be dealing with. I can't imagine.
Oh gosh, it was tough. The first few months was okay because the weather was lovely. But then after, you know, we maybe did the homeschooling for 2 to 3 weeks. And after that, it just was too intense. It was too bad. We both struggled with it. And I just thought, no, we'll just read and we'll do other things. But, you know, looking back now, I suppose I feel guilty about those first few years.
But it was unprecedented. Like, you know, you shouldn't feel guilty. It was unprecedented.
I didn't know about myself at that stage. And I just was always like, why do other people really enjoy this? Why do other people find this so easy? Like, why are people always laughing and joking and making crafts and doing lovely things with their children when I'm like, no, I can't bear it. But,
all right,
you know, thankfully, we're in a different place now. We're very open in this household. My partner, is very, very calm. He's the calm to our storm. And he's like my square peg sort of thing.
You balance each other out.
Possibly on the spectrum, because I think you do float, you find your people. But he's just the epitome of chill. Like, nothing phases him. Nothing makes him angry. And like,
that's so important.
Such a sense of calm to our lives. Yeah,
it's so important. Like, a lot of people ask me, like, because my boyfriend, he's neurotypical. They're like, oh, like that would be so difficult. Like, don't you want to be with someone who's ADHD? And you look, maybe I could be, but I feel like that would be so disastrous because I'm such an intense, in your face person that if I had someone else like that, it would just not work. Whereas my boyfriend, he's going to roll his eyes and be like, oh, you're being so, but he's just like the nicest, calmest and most patient human being that it just works beautifully. It's just it just works so well. And people are like, oh, like poor thing, he must be like a saint. And he is a saint, but like only I'm allowed to say that. And it just works out so well when you have a calming force. It's definitely. So people need it. Even if you're not ADHD, it's just nice to have a partner who's just chill, and they can reassure you when you get into those states, like it's okay. And they're not going to like be mean and say, oh, have you taken your meds? They're going to be nice to you. Well, it's very important.
And he will do that. And he'll just, you know, he'll let me cry and he'll hold my hand. And he'll tell me, you know, you're dealing with all this in your head. Like, I would say to him at times, what are you thinking about? You know, and he's like, Nothing. I'm like, what?
The simplicity of men. The simplicity of men and neurotypicals. They don't think of anything.
Like, I've got about 16,000 heads going, ideas in my head right now. They're racing through my head, especially at night time. They can nothing. Go to sleep so quickly. And I'm like,
yeah.
3 o'clock still, staring at the wall going. And like, he never has dreams. I have dreams so vivid that I, you know, can remember everything. And he's like, no, I slept really well. I'm like,
Go to hell. You're not thinking of anything good.
But like, it just baffles me that you cannot be thinking about it. And I'm like,
that drives me crazy. But some people are like that. Men are like this. I don't want to be, you know, stereotypical, but when you ask men, what are you thinking about? And they say nothing, believe them.
Yeah.
Believe them.
Mad.
Like, they're not thinking about the Roman Empire. They are just not thinking. And if you're neurotypical, I mean, I cannot imagine having like a single thought. Like when people meditate and they say, you know, I just focus on this one tree. Excuse me. I can't switch off. Like,
I fell asleep during meditation. How did you fall asleep during meditation? I'm still thinking about, you know, last night's dinner.
I tried to fall asleep in meditation.
About 17 years ago with somebody. How are you thinking about that tree? Like,
go to hell. Like that tree. Yeah. Absolutely.
I mean, I love the idea of meditation. I really do. Yes. And I will put it on sometimes, especially
and if it works for people. Yeah.
You know, it's brilliant. Mm. It's a wonderful thing. We live by the sea here as well. So I would go down and I put it on in the background. I will be trying it.
Mm.
But I can't fully zone out. But still, in that moment, it's lovely just to have those few moments to relax, you know?
It's centering. It doesn't, like, a lot of people say, like, mindfulness clears your head. My head will never be cleared.
Yeah.
But it'll just. It can center you, like it can Absolutely. Just have you go, okay, like I've got a million thoughts, but I can do this. I can do this this thing. Do you take medication as well? Or so you're on the medication.
So I'm on methylphenidate.
Oh yeah, because your doctor. So you're medicated, okay.
And then I take antidepressants as well, which I've basically been taking since I first went to the doctor with mental health issues. About 15. And I remember him saying to me, well, if you lost some weight, you would be happier. And I think from then I've been like,
what?
Oh, okay. So that's my earliest memory of trying to get help.
That's horrible. I'm sorry they said that to you. That's horrible.
Thank you. And then like from there I was like self-harming. Sorry if that's a trigger for anyone.
That's all right. We'll put a trigger warning. It's fine.
You know, self-harming at a young age, maybe 14. Started to drink, started to, you know, just be really sort of reckless. And, you know, I look back now and I'm like, how did I survive those situations I put myself into? But nobody ever asked any questions. They just thought, why can't you get over this spell of depression? And that spell of depression has stayed with me throughout my whole life. And I tried coming off the antidepressants last year, but it was the withdrawal, firstly, was horrific. I was sick, I was sweating, I was shaking, and then I just couldn't cope without them. My moods were just too low, so I'm
and you shouldn't have to
now. No,
yeah, but you shouldn't have to, like, unless they're harming you. Like, of course, if your doctor says, you know, you shouldn't be taking meds, but like you don't this idea that like taking meds is the easy way out is such bull, because if it is the easy way out and it means that I am not depressed, that I am not self-harming, that I am not doing this, that I'm feeling better, why is that such a bad thing?
Yeah.
You would never say to someone who's taking, you know, chemo, well, you're just taking the easy way out.
Never.
That's crazy. Exactly. That's a crazy thing to say. So it's crazy to say it when it comes to antidepressants and when it comes to ADHD medication. You just should do what works.
Well, that's it. And I mean, as for the ADHD meds, I'd obviously got to that point where I was like, I can't go on like this. Something has to change. They do make a slight difference. I'm only on 15 milligrams 3 times a day, so I'm on quite a low dose, but and I've tried a few different meds. So again, when you get diagnosed, it's not a quick fix. You have to try different medications to find the one that fits, you know?
Yes.
People just think, oh, I'll give you a pill and that's it. No, it's really not that easy.
No, it's not. It's not how it works. For some it is, but it's usually not.
Yeah. Like, and I think with a lot of ADHD meds as well, the first maybe couple of months you take them, it's like, oh, wow. And then that starts to wear off.
Yes.
For me,
even though they're great, like it wears off. Yeah.
Yeah. It's getting me through the day. It's helping me focus in short bursts, which I need. I work from home. I'm lucky that I have that, you know, option to work from home. I still have to go into my bedroom during the day and have a lie down, you know, to close my eyes for 10, 15 minutes to just ground myself again, to pick up my energy again. I know when I'm going to have a dip, normally about 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
The crash.
Yeah.
Yes.
And like, I'm in bed at 9 o'clock most nights because I'm just so exhausted by the day, you know. But you know, I can't imagine life now without them. Something like that.
I love it when people say this on the podcast, because there's so much stigma about medication, and I just really like it when people say the truth that you might have to play with doses. It is not a cure-all. Yep. No one has ever said that ADHD meds were a cure-all. No one ever said that. What we do say is that you might go on it and it might work like that. And if that's the case, amazing. If it doesn't, you will have to try other medications, other doses, and that's okay as well. And as long as they work and they're not causing you harm, you should take them.
Absolutely.
You should just take them.
It's like my son as well. He's on melatonin.
Yeah, I was
going to
ask. So he... Melatonin from the doctor. Yep. Okay.
And I mean, he, before that, he's been taking that since he was about five, maybe he's nine now. You know, we would have had no sleep. He would have been up maybe from 3-4 in the morning, and that would have been him till 10 o'clock at night on the go constantly. Wow. And it just, we couldn't survive either.
No, it's not sustainable.
No. And like, he now still can't go to sleep. He puts on meditation on his wee TV, and he has his melatonin, and like, the door's open, he won't, you know, if he knows our light's off, he won't sleep, so we have to kind of stay awake until he drifts off, which is fine, but
that's all right.
He has those wee things in place, and without, he panics now without the medication, because he's like, I'm not going to sleep, and he doesn't want that for himself either, because he knows now he needs sleep.
Yeah.
And I just think, if it makes life for you and your child easier, it's not an easy way. Yes, of course, I don't want them to be addicted to sleeping medication. Who does?
Yeah,
but you know, what's the alternative?
That's between you and the doctor. Yeah, and that's also between like people making a diagnosis, like, what if they become addicted? First of all, are you a doctor? Mm-hmm. Are you a specialist? No. You will address that concern if that were to happen with a doctor, not from some random person who thinks your kid's going to be addicted. Like, that's ridiculous. That's so silly. I'm not even saying it's stupid now. I just say that's so silly. Like, that's such a silly thing to say. The other question I was going to ask you is that, so you are medicated. Your son also takes medication for sleep. How do people respond to medication in Ireland? Is it frowned upon? I'm assuming because it's hard to access, it might be, but how do people respond, or do you just not tell people because you can't be bothered hearing the nonsense?
No, I mean, I'm very open about it now, and I try and raise awareness, because I know that there are so many people, for the likes I went to school with, who were labelled the bad child and you know, the disruptive one. I know that they probably have ADHD or autism and they are struggling. I haven't faced any backlash. I've had a lot of support, you know, going, okay, that's great. Northern Ireland's a strange one because, again, you know, with the conflict of the Troubles here and the, you know, a lot of
there's so much history,
trauma. People are very not progressive, you know, but there's a lot of, I mean, we can't even, like, supermarkets and things aren't even allowed to open until 12 o'clock on a Sunday here. Until like the church, and you know, people have gone to church and things like that, the hours and stuff.
Yeah, but it's very religious as well.
It is very, and we have a long way to go, put it like that. Whereas we're fully open, a lot of people still believe ADHD is a made up thing. You know, the amount of comments I read, people go, oh, anything to get kind of like sickness benefit, or you know, it's so ignorant.
It's like, we don't even have a sickness benefit for that, so don't worry about it.
I know. Why would I choose this for myself? You know, like, I think there still has to be a lot more education, especially in schools, you know.
So what's it like in school? How is it for your son and navigating getting accommodations for him?
Yeah, I mean, he's in a smaller school here, which is nice, because then there's kind of one-to-one. They have like a SEND teacher, you know, so they have, everybody kind of gets a wee report. You have meetings with your child's school, and they would obviously ask you what's going on and if they have any concerns. They will put wee things in place. My son's had like a sensory box. He had the wiggle cushion. They have love a sensory that. Room. Like, they're really getting a lot better, which is great. You know,
that's wonderful. Because I don't know a lot of schools in Australia. Well, I'm generalizing. I don't know of many schools, specifically in Melbourne, that offer that, specifically in primary school, like a sensory room and a sensory box. Maybe it's changed. I haven't been in primary school for a long time now. So, but that's really wonderful. A sensory room. Wow.
Yeah, no, you really have to, yeah, that's always great. Have to continue to be the voice. So he was in a different nursery school, which then had, you know, the primary attached to it. And it was the nursery that I had gone to when I was younger in the primary school. And I remember explaining to the teacher, you know, because he had problems with following instructions and sitting. And she was like, this is more than autism. This is defiance. And he was literally three, coming four at that age. And I was like.
And that's a caretaker saying that.
How can a child be defiant at that age, you know?
And malicious. It comes with a malice. Like, it's like you're doing it on purpose. And you're.
I said, you don't even, you have no understanding of this. You know, and I just thought, no. And that's when I realized I had to switch him. So I made the move, and they have been wonderful with him now.
That's good.
Every year his needs change a little more, you know. P5 is kind of seems to be the stage where kids grow up a wee bit more, and there are kind of lots of wee arguments between people and bickering and personality traits, you know, and stuff. So
and puberty, because puberty happens as well.
Yeah,
like,
exactly. You know. And he would be struggling. Alexander would be a lot more sort of childlike than his peers. So he's a bit more goofy, and he's a bit like the class clown. He likes to make people laugh and joke about. And I think people find that a wee bit irritating and stuff. And he's not at that level, I suppose, of maturity that his peers are.
Yeah, that can.
But in a way,
that,
I'm like. That's okay, because you know, enjoy your childhood, and you know, but so he's struggling a wee bit more this year with friendships and you know,
and kids can be mean. Kids can be really mean. They can be mean, and they don't know. And I remember I was the annoying kid, and then I also had the autistic kid in my class who was also annoying to me. And now I look back and I'm like, I say that they were autistic, and just kids are. Not only are kids mean, like kids are just odd in general, and like it's just the age. I feel I'm talking as if I have children, but like it's the age, like grade five. I remember primary school. It's like where everyone's having problems with their friends, but like they will catch up eventually. There's this idea, like even with ADHDs and you know, autistics, that they just have to catch up with everybody else, and they just have to meet, and that's just. Not always going to happen. They just might be a late bloomer. That does happen, well, that's okay. They'll get
he's
there.
He's honestly, like, he's a wonderful wee boy. He's not, you know, I think as well, lack of understanding and education. People think when you're autistic, it's the non-verbal or, you know, stimming all the time, or you can't make eye contact. Alexander is the complete opposite. Alexander is extremely friendly. He's very sociable. He particularly gets on well with adults because he can hold a really good conversation.
That is such an ADHD and autistic trait. Yes, yeah. Getting along with adults. Yes,
pressure. He you know, we were out for a walk last night, and there were runners, and like he was high fiving everybody on the way by. Keep going, you're doing well, and you know, everyone.
He sounds beautiful. I want to meet him. He sounds gorgeous.
Like, just are like, you know, he's just the most polite. He's so pleasant. He always has a smile on his face, and I know in my head, he's going to go far. Yeah. But he does have those internal struggles that people don't see. They don't see the anxiety. They don't see the endless worry that he holds in, or the fact that he still loves sleeping with his mum, you know, at 9 years old. And he's very childlike in certain ways, you know, but everybody's different. Everybody's different. Yep. And I mean, it's not a bad thing. That's what I always say to him. Try and drum it into him as well, especially now with the friendships. Never go along with a crowd. Be yourself always. The people who like you for you will be the people that stay around, and the people that don't, they'll move on. But
you'll get better at it. Like people, like you'll get better. I was bad at making friends, not only because I was ADHD, because I was little. Like, how old is he? In grade five, I was Yeah, I was nine. Like, like, children don't know how to do much in the sense, like, they're babies. They're still babies. Yeah. So I don't know why people expect, like, you know, at 10 years old, they should have, like, you know, a network of friends and they should have picked out their bridesmaids by now and, you know, should have. That's even people in their 20s. I still have people in my life in their 20s at university who are studying, who are getting PhDs, who have problems with their friends who are immature. So if at 9 years old they are doing that, that is the age to be. And they'll catch up.
There's so many adults now that struggle as well, because they just had so many false expectations put on them. Like, I'm not like that with him. I'm like, you know, just try your best. You know, if you're not an academic, you will be good at something, and that's all that matters.
Yeah.
Like, when I was at school, my sister was, I don't know if you have it over there, it's a head girl. So she was
school captain. Head girl. Yeah, school captain.
So this was high school. I was like first year. She was in about fifth year. And then second year, upper sixth. And like, I was constantly being compared to her by the teachers. Your sister's doing this. Your sister's head girl. You should be doing this. Why aren't you doing this? You know, it was horrible living in the shadow. Like, I loved her and I loved seeing her progressing.
You were put against her.
I wasn't her. Do you know what I mean? No. And I didn't like the things she liked. And I'm like, you know, again, when you try and make someone with ADHD focus on something they have no interest in, it's never going
to
happen.
And shame them. And you keep shaming them. Shame has never worked. Like, we have to stop. It's like what your doctor said about weight. It's like, if we shame people enough about their weight, it'll click. If we shame people enough about, you know, their depression, it'll work. Shame is not a good tactic.
No, it just pushed me back further. Work. I was like, well, fuck you. I'm not interested. You know, I'm
like, and look at me now. Where's my sister? No, I'm kidding. I'm sure your sister's doing it. It's like, where's my sister now? She's crazy. And look at me. I'm doing so well.
I mean, I know that, like, I feel like I'm only starting to settle in my life now and be mature and stuff at the age of 37, where all my friends were married, had kids, you know. But they're
all
doing
things.
And they
might be divorced in a few years.
You know, none of them are doing the thing that they studied their degree in. They're all doing different jobs, and that's absolutely fine. But there's too much pressure on people to think, you know, okay, by age 16, and I'm an exam invigilator too, so I go into schools and I make sure no one's cheating. So I'm starting that tomorrow. And I just wish I could stand up before the exams and go, listen, guys, this probably means fuck all, this exam, because it's not going to
it's not the be-all or
define
end-all.
You.
It's really not. You know, it's really not the be-all and end-all. I say this without being shady, people who peak in high school always end up like not doing very well. It's like a real thing. Like, you know, the head girl type, the gifted student who in primary school I was always compared to, well, you know, so-and-so, they are not disruptive. They don't do this. And they're performing well, and I'm not trying to be horrible. And now I look at where I am and where they are, and it's not great. They are burnt out. They are stressed. And they're not doing well. And I came out okay.
Yeah,
so let's just be nice to everyone and let's not put pressure.
And let that person have the time to figure out what they want to do in their life. You know, I knew I've always been creative, not in the arty way, but creative as in I've always loved like
artsy.
Media,
social
TV,
media
radio.
Is art. That's art. Yeah. That's art. It is art. It's a form of art.
You know, I studied, I lived in Scotland for 10 years and that's where my wee boy was born. But I studied over there. I did like creative art or, you know, creative media. So radio, I've had my own radio show on community radio. I did like TV interviewing and stuff with college. So I've always had that passion for that. And then obviously it fell into social media. And having the freedom to work for myself, because I was in employment 3 years ago. I worked for a mental health charity, who ironically destroyed my mental health. And I had to take a breather. I know. So at that point, I was like, oh, and I could never go back to an office now. I working for myself is the biggest freedom for me. And it's the thing that helps me so much mentally, because I don't have to answer to anybody. There's no toxic boss to answer to. You know, my hours suit me. I can work in the evening if I want to. you know, on a Monday.
And you can give yourself accommodations and what you want. That's, you know, it's so interesting. I'm so happy for you. And I interviewed another person who does copywriting and their business is online and they are self-employed. And I find it so wonderful that it works for you. And then I'm the complete opposite. If I had to work from home, all power to you, if I had to work from home, I would be so bad. I love that I'm in an office, that I have a nice boss. Brilliant. I have to answer to who, but it's whatever works.
Yeah.
That's why when people are like, it's whatever works for you. It works working from for me. Couldn't imagine it. Sounds like a sixth layer of hell for me. Wouldn't work out. And for you being in an office, it's like, couldn't pay me to be there. So it's good that we found our niche. We found what we like.
I don't know. You can't see my background because it's blurred, but my partner, he also works from home. So he works for Microsoft, but he works like literally at the back of me. So we're in the same office and people are like, how do you do that? But it's like, I'm so hyper fixed in my work that when he tries to ask me something, I'm like, I answer him and nod. Yeah, I totally give him an answer. And then he comes back and goes, and I'm like, you know, I'm answering him, but I'm so focused that I don't realize I've answered him. And he'll come back and maybe give me something. I was like, oh, thanks. And he's like, oh, you told me you want it. I was like, oh, yeah. Sorry about that. You know, sorry. He knows not to disturb me when I'm in deep focus because it's like a poking a bear.
Enraging. Like, don't it's do it. It is the worst thing you can do to me. Like probably maybe even worse than telling me, like, have you taken your meds? It actually destroys me when I'm trying to hyper-focus on an essay and my well-meaning, beautiful parents come in and want to have a chat or are like, you can do this later. And I'm like, I'm going to kill you. I'm actually going to strangle you if you break this focus. Don't do that.
I know. And that's the thing. With all the will in the world, people who love you around you
of course,
can support you, and but they'll never get it unless they go through it themselves. Yeah. They'll never understand that feeling of in deep focus or the feeling of impending doom that can come on you in the morning and by the afternoon you can be as high as a kite and happy and then the next 5 minutes you could be again, something goes wrong or...
off the planet,
You know, it's, but it's, thankfully, you know, I know I can put my own accommodations in place. Monday, I know that I am rubbish, so I'll start working on Monday afternoon. Or like a, you know, a Thursday evening, I know I'm going to be more productive because it's just how my body works and that's fine. I mean, the work gets done. There are absolutely no issues with any of my clients, so... and I'm very honest with my clients as well. I'm very open and honest to say.
So do they know your ADHD and they don't care? I mean, they shouldn't. But
when I'm onboarding, I have a document that just explains that I've got ADHD and that I prefer written communication because verbal communication goes over my head, and I'm like, what did they say?
Same. And you're like listening. It's just you don't, like, it's not going through. Yeah.
Like, I remember my old boss just, you know, she would have been talking to me and I'd be nodding and smiling. And then I'd have to, like, ask her, you know, what was that again?
You listening? You know, I tried. I was trying.
Exactly. I really was trying, but I'm just open and honest. Like, this is what works for me. It makes me much more productive. And, you know, like, all of them have been really like, you know, thanks for sharing that with me and stuff. Like, it's really positive about it. There've been no issues. I don't really like phone calls. I don't know what it is about me. I could stand in a room with 1,000 people and give a talk, but answering a phone call, it fills me with dread.
That's, you know what? Yeah. That's a thing for some people, like answering. Yeah. It's just my dad's like that. He just, my dad is a teacher, so he performs all the time and he's such a great teacher. He is animated as hell. He's ADHD and he's fantastic. Mm-hmm. He gives talks, but he hates having to do the phone. I don't know if it's because he's anxious or it's like, I don't want to have to talk. I don't want to have to do the thing, but he is like that as well. Like, he's a performer, he's confident, but then like with the phone, he's like, you do it because I'm really good
for
with
me,
the phone.
I think it's like, and you can ask him this actually to see if it's the same.
Yeah.
But I think it's the fear of the awkward silence in between the person answering and you talking. Like, I know if I'm performing, I'm giving a speech, no one else is really talking then. So it's on me. I am out there, but then
you're the star.
You're waiting for an answer back. And then I think it's always like, what happens, you know, if I want to get off this phone call and like, how are they going to think I'm rude? And then you're overthinking things 1,010 times. But, you know, yeah, it's.
Do you find scripting phone calls helps you? Like scripting a phone call?
What
like,
do you mean?
Like I have heard from like my friends who are autistic or ADHD, like if let's say they have to ring to make an appointment, which sounds simple, right? But there could be like curveball questions. They have like dot points of what they need to say and what they need to address. Yeah. Sometimes that helps. Like even when I'm doing a complicated phone call, I will have a dot point. So I'll be like, okay, I'm ringing to ask you if you have an appointment on Friday. No, we don't. And rather than going, shit, they don't. What do I say now? Okay, do you have this one? Yes, and you like read really off good, a script. Actually. That could help.
I've never tried. Help. I must try that. I think.
Give it a go.
Yeah, if I'm making phone calls, it's very short and to the point. I know what I'm going to say. Otherwise, it's like, Andy, can you, my partner, can you make this phone call? Can you explain to them? And it's just, you know, what we need to do. I've started being a lot more open in, you know, other network and things and say, you know, I really do prefer written communication for now, you know, if we can bounce back with that. But you just have to put certain things in place that help you.
Yeah. So accommodations, you know? They're not, I now no longer call them special consideration or like special requests. It's just an accommodation.
Mm-hmm.
Like you are accommodating someone's needs, and the person's needs don't have to be because they're ADHD. An accommodation could be, oh, I can't really stand for long periods of time. I would like a chair at this event. And that's not anything like special. It's just you will require a chair. It's not an extra ask or a imposition. It's I'm asking for an accommodation and legally you have to give it to me. So yes. Mm-hmm. And as a client, be a decent human being and just accept that I like written communication, and you might compromise one day and say, I can do a quick phone call, or you just don't want to.
Yeah,
you
no, have to. Absolutely. It's just definitely all about the compromise, and I don't mind as long as I am well prepared. I think that is the key as well, as being well prepared, just like you're scripted, you know, as if I know sort of, or I'm ready with my notepad to take everything down, because I would be, you know, very much an old school person where I would write everything down. I have to have a physical notebook. You know, I print it's off important. Loads of pages so and highlight important. Them. And
oh, it's so important. I learned that in my job in like the world of politics and admin. Never walk into any meeting or room or conversation with your boss without a notepad.
Yeah.
And I think that goes for everyone, whether you're ADHD or not. It's not old fashioned. It is so important to write it down.
Exactly.
Yes.
Even bullet points, so you know, okay, I know what that means, but for it to go back in, because there are times where I'm just like, it goes over my head, I've completely forgotten things. Like I will put things in my calendar, but then I'll ignore the calendar. So unless it's written in front of me on a poster or a notepad.
And you've done the, you've written it down.
Yeah. And then you've, you know, scored it out. Okay, I've done that.
You know, it feels so good. Just going tick,
like
tick,
as much as I work in digital, those, like I... the thought of a digital calendar and stuff, it's too much for my brain. So I have to have certain things like that I resort to.
It's important. Before we wrap up, what are some, I mean, you've imparted a lot of words of wisdom, but what are some things you want my listeners or people in your life to know about you, your ADHD, and just a little nugget of advice before we finish off?
I think the most important thing is be kind to yourself. I mean, there are days where we're so good at piling so much on ourselves and thinking we'll get everything done in a day, and you want to see results immediately, but it's not realistic. Break things down into small, manageable chunks. You know, our brains are completely filled constantly. So if you've got this far that you can hold down a job, a relationship, and other pressures of life, you know, give yourself a massive pat on the back, because that's a lot. And, you know, people don't see things the way we see things. Our brain doesn't race like ours do. So for you to be able to cope with all that, that's amazing. So be kind to yourself. Put things in place that definitely, you know, is going to make your life easier, like I've touched on. It's not as easy for everybody to find someone that is supportive. I totally understand that. I spent years on my own. When you're least expecting it, you know, it will happen. If you feel like, you know, you're not going to find love, no one will accept me, they will. The right person will come along that accepts you wholeheartedly, every piece of you.
And unless you're an evil worm. The person for you. Unless you're an evil worm, you will find someone.
Exactly. And I mean, those things of worrying about, oh, you know, the future with my child and stuff, those worries are gone now. You know, I will be here always by his side. I'll be his biggest cheerleader. He's got a safe space here. You know, just be open and honest. If you do have a child that's on the spectrum, be honest with them. Tell them that they have ADHD or autism. Don't hide it from them.
No, because they need to understand.
Exactly. Of course. You know, and the more you hide yourself,
you owe it to them.
Yeah. And the less accepting people, you know, and the less education will be out there, and less people are more open of their struggles. And, you know, we want to progress and we want to move forward and we want people to be able to access the care that they need without having to fight for it, you know?
Of course.
But yeah, you can do it. You know, if you struggle in an office job, try and, you know, find a job that sits around you and maybe working from home or working flexible hours or part-time.
And ask for help. Yep.
Don't be afraid to ask your boss, could you do maybe a couple of days at home or flexible working or job sharing or stuff like that? You know, whatever you need, because you really need that. I think you need the job for your mental health too, you know?
Yeah.
Because if you're left alone with all those thoughts constantly, it's not a good place, you know, so you need to keep yourself busy. I know a lot of people with ADHD focusing on the exercise side of things, and that's great, you know, but sometimes you're so paralyzed you can't move even. You know, your brain stops you from wanting, you want to do things, but
the executive dysfunction
it is a disabling
symptom of ADHD. Your brain will not allow, it knows that it has to do it, and it knows it can do it. It's not a lack of knowing, but this part, just, it's not letting it happen, that it's not connecting.
And I think, you know, even for things like housework, take small chunks, set a timer. That's what I've started doing, or else my partner will do one timers half are the of best. I'll do the other half, you know. Take a break after each room, because then you know it's not as overwhelming. And especially, I think, for women, you know, there are other conditions that can affect you. Like, I suffer as well with PMDD. I don't know if you've heard of it.
Pre-menstrual disorder? Yeah, PMDD. Yeah. Yes, I think I deal with that as well.
There's a strong link between females with that and you know, ADHD and autism. So, again, it's a much more severe form of PMS where you know, it's more debilitating as well. So have a look out for those things. If you really struggle with your menstrual cycle and stuff like that, and you think this isn't normal, look into that, because that could be a big factor.
Absolutely.
You're not crazy. You're not.
I was about to say that. You're not crazy.
You know, you're not manic, which women would have got labelled with in the past. You're
hysterical.
High strung, you know, hysterical, you're not. You're dealing with a lot. And especially when children come along, because they do blow that structure out of the water that you've had for so long.
Yes. And hormonally, they just kind of, not to be hot, but they kind of ruin you. It's a really, like, it's like, of course, becoming a parent for like a father would be very overwhelming and very different. But like for the woman, for the mother, it's like hormonally, it's for your body, it's altering. And then you add PMDD, anxiety, mental, and like, it just, it's like a deck of cards and just goes, and then it explodes. So it's a lot. It's a lot, guys.
It is. And just, you know, again, just be kind to yourself. Do things that, you know, nature really helps me. Being out in nature makes me realize, okay, life is beautiful. Life is wonderful. See the nature around you and stuff.
That's good.
Simple steps. Music is a big thing for me too.
Oh, music, yes.
So just find what works for you, and don't be scared to try, you know, if you want to try the medication, try it. Because it will not, you know, they'll start off
nothing
small,
bad can happen
anyway. Exactly.
Yes, and then nothing, I always say this, I always reiterate this, if you have side effects, you stop taking the medication and the side effects go away.
Yeah.
It's okay. Nothing is permanent. If you don't like the meds, you stop taking them. You're not bound to this thing. It's okay to try medication with your doctor and all of that. It's okay, guys.
Absolutely, it is. And, you know, don't be ashamed, you know, everybody needs help at some points in their life. Don't be scared to ask for help. And the last point, I suppose, would just be to have a good support network around you. I know it can be really hard to make friends and to have family that support you. But, you know, there are people out there who will. And, you know, keep your circle small. And, you know, you can trust the people that get you. And you'll find your people, definitely.
Yeah, you'll find them. That was beautiful. Where can people find you and connect with you? Plug your stuff.
I'm on Instagram, it's Social Strategy NI. I'm sure you'll tag that for me. Or,
yes, it'll be whatever. In the description, everything.
Yeah, and I give out loads of like free hints and tips about social media for small businesses. And like if anyone ever just needs any advice, just drop me a DM and I'm happy to answer any questions. And it's been wonderful talking to you. And like, I could have talked for another hour. Honestly,
You've got to go get your dress. So exciting. It'll look slay. You'll look great. Yeah, it'll fit. And they'll make alterations. It's called accommodations. They will make alterations. When are you getting married? When is it? In
The 22nd of June. So about five weeks or so.
Oh my God, that's so exciting.
It's exciting. It's also like, oh God.
Oh my God, you're going to have your son in the wedding. That's going to be so cute. I know. That's so cute. That's beautiful.
So, please God, it's just going to be a very laid back occasion. We're not fussy people. We just like chill, music, friends. So it's just a very much a day of eating, having some drinks, dancing. Yes. No structure, just go with the flow.
But fun. A good wedding, one that we want to go to, not a destination one where we have to, you know, pay for our own tickets and dresses, and it's this whole affair. Nightmare. No shade to anyone doing that, but it sounds lovely. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. It was so lovely to meet you. I'm gonna spell it out for you guys in the description if this it's not clear enough. Don't forget to follow Therese and follow me on all your favorite streaming platforms. And I'll see you guys in the next episode.
Thank you,
Lucy. Alrighty, thank you. You too. Alrighty. See ya. Bye.